All right, welcome to Return on Podcast, where we talk about the experiences, the obsessions, and the habits of the most successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Tyler Jeffcoat, and I want to welcome you to this episode of ROP. You know, Amazon bought Whole Foods, right? The big grocery chain Whole Foods in 2017 to push its retail and marketplace businesses deeper into the food and beverage industry. Consumables have really been front of mind for Amazon for a while, but that was a tangible, like $13 billion tangible investment in Amazon cracking into the space of consumables, of repeat customers, of repurchase intent, and of owning actually the gigantic grocery category. I'm not sure that they've gotten to where they're owning it yet, but they're making some progress. This trend was really, in a kind of a fascinating way, accelerated by the pandemic, right? All of a sudden, grandma was a little bit more comfortable maybe buying something consumable on Amazon or through a website. And yet, consumables is kind of every other category that we represent here at Seller Accountant. 2022 has been mostly headwinds, right? Whereas things were really frothy and amazing and profitable over the years of the pandemic, it's been a little bit more challenging in the last 9 months. And so how we drive our marketing strategy, our digital marketing, our paid strategy, whether it's consumable or not, is a really interesting question that I want to wrestle with today. And to wrestle with that question, I want to bring my friend in, Luke. Luke, you own Eco D2C, an agency that specializes in driving revenue growth. And you've got a real clear focus. You serve all sorts of Amazon and direct consumer brands, but I think the consumable space is an area that you excel in, man. Thanks for joining me today. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude, you bet, man. So Luke, always, I love getting to meet people for this show. And I always say, hey, here's my friend Luke. But actually, Luke, you and I probably meet almost every month to just talk shop and grind away what it looks like to build our businesses. And just to kind of get a little bit of your journey here, at what moment in your life, kid going to a liberal arts college in Indiana, at what point in your life did you decide getting a real job is not an option for me? I got to go start a business.
So it's funny you ask that. So I never intended on starting a business, which okay. I feel like a lot of people like you and I say, but I was 2 years out of college. I had moved out to Seattle and I was trying to get, I was in a situation in which I was trying to get a job working for an environmental consultancy that I had my eyes on there. And I had moved out to that city with the idea of getting involved in something on the consulting marketing. And that was, Seattle was known and still is known for being like a very like green friendly city and having businesses doing interesting things along those lines. And what I realized is that I was fighting to get onto a ladder, and it was not going to be a ladder that I could jump off. It was not going to be a ladder that I could, you know, I wouldn't be able to like do 2 years there and then go do travel and do these things that I always wanted to do. And so I made the decision to basically take up what little money I had at the time. I made a list of things that I wanted to do or learn how to do before I got quote unquote serious. And then I left to go do them. And so one of the things on that list was, there was a couple of things that were related to travel, but I wanted to learn Spanish. I wanted to become fluent. And so I ended up in Colombia and ended up starting my first business there. Almost like an opportunity arose and I jumped at it. And then once I discovered that, like that was all she wrote. The rest is history. I didn't want to do anything else but build things.
Love it. I feel like that journey is, you're right, it is pretty common to be like, yeah, I'm probably going to get a job. My parents got jobs and people get jobs. And then you realize that, but in order to do what I want to do, I don't want to be on I love that illustration. I don't want to be on a ladder that I can't get off of. I want to build something that I can have some say in. And then the problem becomes, once you've tasted working for yourself, it's actually not easy to be a good team player and just be someone's employee again. Kind of, you catch the bug and it's kind of hard to turn back, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it blows off the doors of what's possible, especially if you get like an early success with it, I find. So it's got like all the bumps in the road, right? Nobody calls it easy, but it's, yeah, once I got a taste of it, it was all I wanted to do.
Well, so let's talk about bumps in the road for a minute. So this has been a year, Luke. You and I both have, mm-hmm. grateful to say this, but we both have successful agency consulting businesses. You serve a lot of e-commerce brands. I serve a lot of e-commerce brands. But damn it, 2022 has been tough. Like, and it's not tough because we're like worse at what we're doing. It's tough for the same reasons that the listeners of this show have had a tough year. It's just, there's just been headwinds. I got an email from a friend this morning that said he's suffering wind burn because of so much headwind this year, right? What are you seeing in the market that's been, how are your customers doing? How is your agency doing? What are you seeing in the market right now?
So I think there's a lot of things that are happening at once. Like a lot of us know it's pretty, you can just turn on the news and you can see a lot of the big sort of macro reasons like the economy and supply chain issues. Everybody's dealing with a lot of the same problems around the world right now. But there's also a piece of this that is incredibly important that is not going away, even if the economy turns around, supply chains cleared up tomorrow. And that's just the way people buy online is changing. The space has matured and digging in more is necessary. So I know a lot of social media marketers, for instance, that are yearning for the 2017 days, or like, and you and I can remember when it was possible to make five figures a month selling HDMI cables on Amazon. Right. The space has matured. Like COVID might've accelerated some things, but we were already moving in this direction. And so really
what are some of you're seeing that are changing? Like what are some of those pivot points that you're seeing that were like, dang it, you can't just sell HDMI cables and make 20K a month anymore?
Well, those kinds of brands are erased at the bottom on Amazon now. You need to have a brand. Like brands have had to grow up, so to speak, and have to deal with like much larger business problems. Like you don't see as much content these days about, hey, open up like some FBA brand from a supplier you found in Alibaba and retire to Costa Rica. You don't see like those people are, a lot of that content's getting laughed at right now, frankly. It's not to say that you can't still do it. I don't want you to go to your friends and be like, this guy Luke is just talking smack, but it's gotten a lot harder. The cat was out of the bag on that a couple of years ago in terms of people knowing how much opportunity was on Amazon. And so the marketplace has gotten more competitive. The marketplace has gotten more expensive to pay to play. And brands are having to look now at, they're having to look at incorporating other channels. They're having to look at omni-channel strategy. Amazon as a platform itself is showing signs of prioritizing organic rank for listings that get converting traffic from external sources. Like we're looking for hard proof on that, but there's all of this. There's a lot of evidence that we're seeing that we are moving in that direction. And so then comes the question, how? What other channels are we incorporating? People look to social to be for the brand awareness, quote unquote, piece of it. What does that actually mean for you? Like, how are you measuring that? Like what other channels, regardless of whether Amazon was a small piece that fit into your wider digital marketing strategy before, or whether your business was entirely dependent on it, the way we use these channels is changing. And in order to really find success, you really want to dig into like true omni-channel is a buzzword, but there is a big difference between an omni-channel strategy and a multi-channel strategy, having a cohesive plan and really growing as a business as opposed to having something that's strictly lifestyle.
And just to make sure, if I heard you right there, were you saying that there's a difference between multi-channel and omni-channel? Is that what you're saying? There's a distinction.
Absolutely.
So help our listeners understand that distinction, if you don't mind.
Yes, absolutely. So a multi-channel strategy just means that you're present in different places. And the strategy for each of your channels is very channel specific. It's a lot of satellites moving in different directions. And an omni-channel strategy is a strategy that actually has one cohesive overarching strategy that the different channels fit into and a cohesive voice across those channels. So for example, if all of your channels are driving traffic to different places, if you're not really sure like which is fitting into the bottom of your funnel versus upper funnel, if you have, maybe you have different marketing partners that are involved and none of them are even like talking with each other, they're just like running their own shows. Like these are examples of multi-channel. You're in multiple places, but customers, depending on where they visit you and how, where they discover you, they might have a pretty broken experience of seeing you on one channel versus the other. Omnichannel is going to be a lot more centered around having something specific, something cohesive that all of your different advertising channels are getting behind. An easy thing to think of is a new product launch. How are you incorporating Amazon, social, Google, email? There's a lot of learnings you can spread across different marketplaces in terms of using learnings on one channel to optimize your other channels. Is your website up to snuff in terms of if you're priced on Amazon the same as you are on your website, people would rather buy at Amazon, which maybe that's great. Maybe that's exactly what you want to be. But if you're trying to prioritize your website experience, it needs to be compelling. People need a reason to buy there. Social is a great place to test creative that you can spread across your other channels. There's a lot of different examples of what you can use to have one cohesive overarching strategy instead of effectively a bunch of misfits running around hoping to have success.
So let's say that a brand woke up today, they're listening to this podcast, and they've decided that they're a band of misfits. It's almost, I almost picture this like you're trying to fight a battle along some kind of a country line, and you either have a coordinated strategy to move your forces forward.
Mm-hmm.
You have a very discombobulated lack of a cohesive strategy, and yet you're still fighting on multiple fronts, right? I feel like that's the picture that I got in my mind when you mentioned multi-channel versus omni-channel. But Timmy wakes up this morning and says, oh boy, I'm discombobulated. What are some of the tactical steps that he could take to make meaningful progress towards being a real omni-channel success story? And yeah, give us some of your thoughts on that front.
Yeah. So first of all, I would highly suggest, there are some aggregated numbers that I would highly suggest looking at. Do you know what your aggregated spend is across channels? And do you know what your aggregated sales is across those channels? And are these things regularly being looked at? And let me dive into why this matters in particular when it comes to talking about social media and driving brand awareness to ideally get sales on Amazon. Since iOS 14, tracking capabilities have been reduced. Everybody knows that. But what this has meant for a lot of brands is they're told just to go like invest in brand awareness. They don't necessarily have like much of a funnel. They're just kind of throwing money at it. And something that we've seen a lot on the Amazon side, for instance, is we'll be humming along doing what we do best. And all of a sudden we'll see this drop in total sales and then brand interest in branded terms. And then we'll say, well, hold on, what happened here? And then we'll look for clues in the marketplace and we get on a call with our partner. And then sure enough, they'll be like, oh yeah, social just seemed really nebulous. So we just decided to cut it. We decided to cut a budget there. And there's been no effort to look at what the percentage drop was in Amazon when they did that on their website or anywhere else that they might happen to be. So it's never going to be perfect. Like even if you like, attribution between channels can be tough, and there's some ways to approach that I'm happy to dive into. What Google, Facebook, Amazon, et cetera, say, your numbers are always going to be like slightly different if you're trying to reconcile between platforms. But if you're not even making an effort, if you don't even have a plan, then you could be throwing real wrenches into your strategy, or you could have a strategy that was on its way to success and you've cut it because you weren't able to tactically, you weren't able to properly measure it. So that's one example of one of the elements.
I'm actually digging there a little bit, but one comment I want to make here is, as a CFO practitioner, and we're both serving kind of these same $1 million+ brands that are selling on Amazon and other e-commerce channels. This is why it's so important for us to measure tacos, like true tacos. You mentioned the two variables, actual total variable advertising spend divided by actual total sales across all channels. And I think we can get, this is another siloing faux pas that we can make as brand managers. We can be so focused on ACoS on Amazon or looking at actual, it's funny, as soon as you start talking about Facebook, you're all of a sudden looking at ROAS just for that Facebook spend or something like that. And I think that your comment there is so resonant, is that we need to make sure that we understand actual all-in tacos, and that tacos number is regularly compared to our expected lifetime value of a customer, so that we have a strategy that is not just cohesive. And by the way, this is the like other part of this kind of military illustration here, but it can't just be cohesive across front one and front two, but you're like, whatever, your supplying depot that's bringing in the funding, right? Your finance team, your logistics team, your sourcing team need to all be aligned. And at the end of the day, the price of admission is profit. You do have to actually make a living in order for this to be successful. Any other comments about that? And then I want to ask you about attribution.
Yeah. So you already touched on it. Actually knowing what your LTV and what your repeat customer ratio is on Amazon is an awful lot of sellers that we talk with have no idea what this number is, because Amazon doesn't give it to you directly. It takes some kind of tool or partnership, like digging on the back end, to actually get that, but you can actually get that. So if you dive into the reports, for instance, like you're not going to be able to see, just so everybody knows how this is done, at least roughly on the back end. If you dive into the reports, you're not going to see your customers' emails, but there is going to be like a placeholder email that is unique. And you can see how many times that customer comes back, and you can measure that over time. As you're thinking about allocating your budget and what your ACoS, your tacos, I've heard people refer to this as the LACoS, like lifetime ACoS, so to speak. If your repeat customer rate is really high, which if your brand happens to be a repeat consumable, you mentioned we work with a lot of food and beverage brands, a lot of them ride or die based on those numbers, right? If you do have a high repeat customer rate and you're looking for growth, you might actually have more room to grow there than you thought.
Well, and I think, by the way, for anyone listening to this who's selling kind of a more of a traditional, not a supplement or not a repeat customer centric brand, don't let that point fall on deaf ears here. Like it's You may be wanting to spend 100% of the sale price of the product to acquire the customer. You may be happy to spend a ton of money in ads up front if you have conviction that the customer is going to purchase it 10 times over the course of 3 years or something like that. And so this idea, like that math, that assumption that Luke, that you're talking about there of what is the actual LTV of my customer, given the limited data set that I have within Amazon or any other channel, that I've never heard of a Lakos, but I think that's crucial. And that's what we try to, I didn't know to call it that, but that's what we try to measure at Seller Accountant to be like, okay, if we decided that your acceptable tacos is 10% of the sale price because you sell a $100 product and here's your profit level. But now we understand that you're going to have 2.5 purchases lifetime from a customer. Okay, now we can go calculate a total expected profit for all whatever, 2 point whatever purchases. And therefore, we can afford to spend more than 10% on the ads. We can spend 20% because now we're going to buy the customer and get a repeat purchase. And this goes back to your comment on the omnichannel strategy, where this is why if you spend that extra money, if you decide to spend double the tacos, double the advertising to acquire that customer, and you don't have a coordinated repeat purchase retargeting campaign on the back end, you're throwing that money away, right? I'm sure that's really crucial for your customers, Luke.
Yeah, absolutely.
So pivoting directly into the consumables, what are you learning about being successful selling a repeat? We've obviously talked about LTV. That's crucial. Aligning your ad budget with your LTV. But what else are you learning about making a consumable or food or beverage business successful, either direct to consumer or on Amazon?
Well, a lot of it falls into the same things that will make any other seller successful on Amazon. I mean, there are some notable differences in the food and beverage space, namely that even post-pandemic, some two-thirds of all grocery, well, upwards of that, it's over 70% of grocery purchases still happen in-store. So your advertising mix is different. The way it fits into your overall strategy might be different. You have a lot more digital-first brands that might not even be focused on brick and mortar. It's its own kind of animal. But at the end of the day, we're still launching, testing, iterating, getting feedback, especially in the early days, you're just making sure that you can be nimble, taking advantage of all the opportunities that Amazon has to offer in terms of measuring up your space. We talk with a lot of, and this will circle back around to omnichannel strategy, but it's pretty common for us to have brands approach us these days. And they're always, it's always some version of like, we're trying to crack the code on Amazon. We feel like we haven't cracked the code. I feel like spending $1,000 a day is not too much to ask. Like, why can't my provider just get us there like tomorrow? And what it comes back down to a lot is we're bottom up, top down advocates in terms of you build the bottom of your funnel first. And then allocate, if you can get that portion of the funnel, and this is regardless, by the way, whether it's Amazon, whether it's Google, whether it's Facebook, whether it's another platform, if you can get the bottom of your funnel built out, if you can get your PPC campaigns like working really well at a high ROAS, then, or even like a basic level of decent performance, then you can start investing in some of the upper level stuff. And the way that we like to connect this across channels is people ask, typically, this is framed in what platform should we be on? Like Amazon versus Facebook versus Google versus all these others, where I would say the better question is, first of all, how are you building your funnel, whether it's in the way that we are advocating or not? Then start to drop in the different channels. Like it's still likely going to be Amazon in terms of where the most opportunity is at the bottom of your funnel. But are you just trying to like scale on Amazon as fast as you can so you can justify like DSP? Or are you also thinking about other channels that you can bring into the mix to really flesh out the bottom of your funnel before you start investing in like programmatic before you're ready and waste a ton of money?
For consumable D2C brands, I was just curious, you just brought up Amazon's probably still, and by the way, this is probably true for every category, you're still going to get a better ROAS on Amazon normally than you will in almost any other channel, especially as an unknown kind of new brand, because Amazon still has the eyeballs that are having purchase intent behind those eyeballs. And so we may get mad at Bezos because he gets a bunch of our money, but he still delivers. I believe it's still 5 times the ROAS of a cold start Facebook campaign or cold start Google campaign. My question is, who's number two right now for like a consumables brand? All right, I've built my bottle of funnel. I've got Amazon as dialed in as I can right now. I'm ready to start pivoting Omni. Where do you go next first? Is it Facebook? Is it Google? Is it something else? Does it depend on the brand? Like, how do you guys approach that?
It's going to depend on the brand and where the customers are. So the way that we like to think through that is, if this was a couple of years ago, then I would have said number two is probably like Facebook, Instagram, right? The social media channel that's right for you is going to depend on what kind of brand you have, which demographic is properly makes up your customer base. But since tracking got a little bit more complex, I would say that in our space, it'll often be I'm going to exclude Instacart from this conversation because we want to keep it to wider e-commerce, and that's more relevant to brick and mortar. But it's usually Amazon and then either social or Google, I would say. And I'm speaking in really broad generalities here. The difference being, if you're in an established category and there's a lot of search for it already, then Google's really a great place to start. A lot of the same rules are going to apply there as Amazon. Social media is going to be a lot more, it's more interruptive kind of marketing, right? And you're going to get a lot of people who are more like browsing, right? They were checking something else out and you've piqued their interest. So if you're in a category that's like new, if you have a new innovative product, if you're trying to test messaging and like gauge interest and things like this, like social media is still awesome for these things. But if you're walking into a category that is more established and has the search, then I would certainly say Google is ideally you're testing all of these and seeing you're testing all of these, you have attribution properly, you know, set up as well as you can, and you're allocating budget accordingly as you go. But those are the first places we typically look.
By the way, hearing you articulate that, I've never really thought about it quite like this. Tell me if I'm wrong here, because I might be misstating this. But like, if I'm imagining kind of a bigger picture of a funnel, obviously Amazon's as close to the bottom of the funnel as possible. I mean, your purchase intent for someone who looks up on the app as a Prime member is very high. And I just always clumped Google and social as the rest of the funnel, but it actually might be more that Google is more middle funnel, right? Like they've at least heard of the category. They know enough to Google it and are doing research. Their purchase intent is almost always going to be lower than if they're on Amazon. But that makes sense that if you're doing bottom up, you would probably go Google second, unless you're hoping to be more disruptive. It's a less well-known. There's not as much current search volume. And then that here's a new cool thing that you've never heard of before is going to be a TikTok video or is going to be a YouTube short that's, hey, I never knew you could do this for your cat. Now you can. I had a client last month, Luke, that had a totally random TikTok person put a video out that generated like a 10X to their product on Amazon overnight. And we were like, holy cow, how did that happen? And it was because there was a problem that existed, but no one knew what to call it. They didn't understand that there was like a thing in the social media created that top of funnel awareness that there's a new category in my universe that is, I can solve this problem. Would you describe Google as being more mid funnel then in that regard?
So when we approach it from the way that we approach it from the omnichannel perspective is that each one of these platforms has ways of using it that's more bottom, middle, or top. So on Amazon, like your very bottom of the funnel is going to be your sponsored product campaigns, like your certain like sponsored brand campaigns. And then if you're going like upper, if we're starting getting a little bit further out, then we're getting display. And if we're going really upper funnel, then we're getting into DSP and programmatic. You have similar dynamics happening on Google, Facebook, and other platforms, right? Like you're still going to have to choose which platforms you're going to play on first or how you're going to prioritize them. But if we're just running like video on social media, it tends to be a little bit more, to your point, like upper funnel and drive awareness. Your retargeting campaigns are probably going to be your highest, like directly converting campaigns on social media. Like probably, I am again speaking in broad strokes, but you can operate this way where each channel operates in just one piece of your funnel. But what I'm suggesting is that the pyramid actually there's a lot of overlap there. There's the bottom of the funnel ways that you use all of these channels. There's a middle funnel way to use all of them. There's an upper funnel way to use all of them.
It completely makes sense. That's actually much clearer. Thank you. All right. So I want to end the part of our discussion that's on business tactics here with maybe one more kind of shot at kind of a tactical practical here. Luke, if you were going to be speaking to a brand owner that's listening to this show and we're going to say, okay, some of this stuff has resonated. Give me like one or two nuggets that I can go take action on next week that might move the needle in the quest to either coordinate my strategy or be more successful off Amazon. Like, does anything pop in your head that might be that summative or summation of the things that somebody ought to take away and try to do in the next few weeks?
Yeah. So one thing that we are enjoying from a tactical perspective is we're making efforts to build little Amazon armies for brands that are off platform whenever we can. So what we mean by that is, so we have Amazon attribution now, posting attribution links directly into social media campaigns and things like this, we still find to be like painfully inaccurate a lot of the time, or at least difficult. So there's a couple of workarounds that we've been focusing on. And again, this is all going to depend on what you're trying to do, but we like to we'll put a landing page between the external campaign and your Amazon listing. So the attribution link will be on the landing page and there'll be some kind of offer on the landing page to try to capture an email, which of course is not something we know on Amazon. So if we can get between the customer and Amazon even a little bit, and we can get an email list that we can retarget. We can get, frankly, more accurate attribution data by setting it up this way. Then will some people fall off because they have an extra thing in their way? Yes. But we're also going to be sending more qualified traffic to the Amazon's listings. I can't imagine that Amazon is prioritizing listings for organic rank they're getting that gets traffic that doesn't convert. It just doesn't make, that's just not how the platform works. So if you can dial that in, and if you can get external traffic helping your listings in a variety of ways, and you can create this off-platform audience that you can use for new product launches, that you can send out emails to whenever there's a Prime Day happening or the holidays or whatever peak season event you have, then you have an asset that you can use to great effect on the marketplace, which is something that's really valuable. People have been frustrated, sellers have been frustrated forever because of their lack of control and ability to do this with their audience on Amazon. So we've been investing a fair amount in strategies along those lines and have been seeing some good results.
I appreciate you saying that because I meant to come back to attribution earlier. And that was, we all know this is true and it's not easy, but it's worth it. The effort to try our best to engineer customer ownership into our funnel. And by the way, initially, this will be at the cost of some efficiency, like where if you introduce a landing page into the middle of your ad stream, you are going to lose conversion. Therefore, your price per conversion is going to go up. But at some point early in our iteration, getting to 10, 15, 20,000 emails that we can then interact with a relationship with our customers, I think that's pretty, and it's almost never been more valuable. It's funny, there was a few years ago, Luke, where people were saying, well, this doesn't really matter anymore, don't worry about emails. But I disagree. I think one of the most powerful assets we can have as a brand, especially as we look to actually build a brand, is a relationship with customers that allows us to launch new products, solicit feedback should we need it, that kind of thing. And yeah, anything else, any other anecdotes related to attribution that you think would be pertinent?
I think that's the big one when it comes to Amazon, is just making sure that you are tracking, you are able to track as much as you can the traffic and conversions that are coming to your platform from these external sources and being able to do it accurately.
Do you have a favorite tool, by the way? Do you have a favorite, like if we're trying to do omnichannel attribution, here's a gadget that's out there that you guys ought to take a look at. Is there anything that pops in your mind when I ask that question?
There are multi-channel like attribution like tools out there, but they're expensive and frankly, we haven't used them. Like I wouldn't feel comfortable recommending one. I do like-
But that's helpful, by the way. You can save us a lot of money if a pro that uses this for a lot of brands is like, hey, I'd be careful not to spend $500 a month on a tool like that. That's helpful.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing is multi-channel attribution is inherently going to be messy. The numbers from platforms don't line up. Like Amazon's own internal reporting doesn't line up to itself. Like constantly getting into it, knowing that it's important, but knowing it's going to be messy is a pretty important, you want to manage your expectations there, but it doesn't, it's going to be impossible to measure how your other activities are really shaping up for the big picture, unless you're taking a look at the mix all combined.
Love it. A takeaway here, and then we're going to pivot to a couple of fun topics here is interesting. But this is a year where there are some headwinds. The market's a little weird. The capital markets related to acquiring Amazon businesses are not as rosy as they were a year ago. And as a result, this discussion, Luke, that you and I are having is another step in the kind of drum I've been beating this summer to say, this is the time to invest in your brand and in driving future value for your brand. And one of the things that we as a population neglected when things were so easy on Amazon during the heat of the pandemic was we neglected some of these infrastructure builds that you're alluding to. Let's make sure we understand all three phases of our funnel for different channels, that we have a coordinated strategy, that we are fighting for customer information and fighting for attribution, knowing that it's imperfect. And now's the time to invest while the market's weird. You're not going to sell your business for maximum multiple right now. You're going to need to spend, if you have cash flow, you may want to invest a little bit more in building the future so that when the sun comes back out again, which it will, you're going to be in a position to get maximum value on the market for your brand. Any other comments about brand building before we pivot here?
No, just a good luck to everybody out there fighting the good fight. Like now's one of the times to hang in there. The landscape is always changing and there's always, are there other channels that are like, everybody wants to know more about TikTok these days, right? And if TikTok's right for your brand, then fantastic. That's a whole conversation. But there are ways to dig into a lot of these major platforms and get more out of them. But it takes bringing the whole team into the room. It takes aligning around a particular strategy, but there is still room to grow even in the midst of headwinds. It just requires the crew working a little closer together to extend the metaphor.
Love it. Love it. All right. So wild left field pivot here. This is really useful. Hope you guys took some nuggets out of that. Luke, tell us about the time. I want to hear the story. I mean, we have to keep this kind of quick, but I want to hear the story about how you went looking for wild African hippos in the Colombian jungle and found them. Tell us what was going on there, man.
So this was satisfying because a lot of people didn't think that we'd actually be able to do it. But it's okay. So the my story with this begins like some time ago. But the full backstory is that unfortunately this is like another Pablo Escobar caused problem. He had a zoo. And when he was killed, they took away most of the animals. But hippos are the most violent, not the most violent. I think they kill the most more people than like any animal, any more than any mammal, at least in like the world. Like they're enormous. They swim quickly. When they run on land, like they're like as fast as a person and they're really territorial. So if one of them's chasing you, like it's a race. They look big and clumsy and they're not. They look clumsy and they're not. They definitely are huge. And so Escobar gets killed. He has four hippos that he left behind, one male, three females. Now there's over 60 of these things. Just like they got out and they're just roaming around the jungle in the mountains of Colombia. It's just an objectively ridiculous situation. It's a classic invasive species situation. So when I was in college, I had a scholarship working with an environmental center back at that time. And so I had to kill a lot of really boring plants. Just invasive species like wisteria and English ivy and things that, you know, I just walk around with some other college students in the same gig, and we would clear the area of these things. Really, really repetitive, really boring work. So when I found that there was an invasive species that were hippos, I had to go check it out.
I'll jump all over that. Yeah.
Yeah. So me and a good friend essentially just caught a bus to this town that was like nearby. We found a couple of like, we went to the one hotel that had like little pedal bikes that you could rent, and then just like biked all over the jungle until we found them. And so it was like 14 of them. They're in a lake. Like they were yawning, which I found out later is like a sign of aggression, but you could fit like a body in there like easily. But yeah, they're living their best hippo lives, like free of any of the dangers that they would face back in Africa. So it's a ticking time bomb in terms of when this will cause a problem. But it was satisfying to find them because a lot of people doubted we would. But it's just this, it's a funny metaphor for Escobar's like legacy in a certain way, because nobody knows what to do with them. Like the army came in and shot one, and then people got upset and protested outside the National Congress wearing like animal masks and playing the Lion King soundtrack, and that worked somehow. Like the animals are just multiplying and not getting touched. So it's just this, it's this problem that nobody knows how to deal with. But at some point, they're going to have to, I don't think it's killed anybody in the local town yet, but there's videos of these things just walking through the main street.
Wow. That's amazing. What an absurd, amazing story there, Luke. That's, I really thank you for sharing that with us, man. All right. Final segment. Every episode we end with we call it the Return On Podcast. We're going to try to grab the essence of James Clear's Atomic Habits. You don't rise to the level of your goals, you're going to fall to the level of your habits. So here's my question. Is there a habit, hack, tactic, practice that's given you an absurd, an equally a hippo-sized return on investment?
I meditate almost daily in the mornings, and I get the most out of it when I'm doing it daily. I like to use Sam Harris's Waking Up app, and just making a habit out of not only meditating, but also digging into some of the more like mindful content is something that I just personally found to be like really useful. Just one example recently of something that's been impactful was a mini series called Time Management for Mortals. And as somebody who's been obsessed with productivity hacks at different points in time, just to listen to content that makes like, they make a lot of really good points. But there's this idea that if only we can optimize enough, that will get there, wherever that is, like we'll be able to do it all. And just to return to the lesson of like, that's false, right? Like the way that you get places is by really focusing on the couple things that matter. There's always going to be too much that is worth doing to do, both in business and life. Having a practice that just the base of meditation, but also like making time in my like day-to-day and week-to-week for the things that help clear my head more than just the sitting down for 20 to 30 minutes a day has really done a lot for my sanity.
That's so well said. I have nothing to add to that because every word of that was very well stated. It isn't about doing more. It's about doing the right things and focusing. I hope you guys rewind that and listen to Luke's comments. Luke, thank you, my friend. I will make sure that your website is posted in the show notes. But just really quick, I just want to make sure people grab this. Like, who out there listening to this needs to reach out to you and learn more about what you guys do for sellers and brand owners?
So we get particularly excited about working with mission-driven brands, hence our branding. But really anybody listening to this who cares to reach out and talk about some of the things that we've hashed over today, whether it's larger omnichannel strategy or just how to squeeze a bit more out of the marketplace and really size up whether or not you're taking advantage of as much opportunity as your brand has on Amazon right now, more than happy to talk with you. You can reach me at luke@ecod2c.com.
Awesome, dude. Yeah. And again, we'll make sure those links and the website and whatnot are in the notes. Luke, you're the man. Thanks for joining me today on the show.
Thanks, Tyler.
All right. Hey, and guys, we say this every week and I really mean it. Anyone who makes it 40 plus minutes into this pod, I just want to say thank you. Luke and I are grateful. Your time is valuable. Hope you've grabbed a couple of nuggets that serve you. And with that, we'll go ahead and pivot for the day. Until next time, I hope you kill it. Take care.